Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. Ageism is one of my favorite soap boxes, but the subject is sadly underrepresented on this podcast. My guest today is on a mission to change the conversation around aging. In a culture where many avoid thinking about older adulthood until the last minute, she urges us to embrace aging in a positive light. Today we discuss ageism. That which is directed at us and that which we direct at other generations. Also, our self-talk can often be ageist. I'm too old for that. These wrinkles make me look so old. I'm 70. I'm an antique. Just this morning, I overheard a woman of perhaps 45 explaining why she colored her hair. I'm old now, so I have to. With that sort of proclamation, I fear she may actually be old by the time she's 60. Corinne uses the term teenagers to describe us mid-agers who are embracing life and still learning and making plans. Enjoy our conversation and share it. And then speak up about any ageism you witness. It's the last acceptable prejudice. We can't contribute to it, nor should we ignore it. Listen now. A couple of times lately that because I have over 200 episodes out in the ether now, it was time to group them by subject matter. One of those subjects is ageism. And despite the fact it's one of the soapboxes I quite enjoy getting on, I don't have many episodes focusing on it. My guest today will help with that. Corinne encourages us to embrace aging in a positive light. My friends and I are all mid-boomer age, and most of us represent that positive light. It's my story. We're fine with the number, it's only a number, and we make a point of moving our bodies and keeping up our social connections and checking in on each other quite regularly. A few of us have had a health issue come out of left field, but that's about the health issue, not necessarily about our age. We do experience incidents of ageism, which pees us off royally. But I'll be honest, I need to be careful about making comments about some younger folk. And I work at not internalizing ageism, self-ageism. It's a thing for many of us. Corinne's book, Teenagers, emphasizes that 55 to 80-year-old is an extended middle adulthood, not a decline. Which works for me because I call us all mid-agers. We started the journey and we're not done yet, so we're somewhere in the middle. Let's get started. Corinne Allman, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast.
Thank you for having me. I am excited to be here.
Well, I've got some questions that I'm sure you are going to shed lights on, so this is great. Let's start with ageism. Has it always existed, or is it more obvious now that age 80, 90, even 100 isn't a novelty anymore?
Yeah, well, I think it's both. I think it's probably always existed. I mean, I can't speak for all of human history, but I can imagine that there have always been the older people talking about the young whippersnappers who don't know what they're doing, you know, and don't like the young people's music and how they dress and things like that. And then I can imagine that our ageism towards older adults has maybe increased as we have been living longer and there are more and more older adults just around because of our improvements in quality of health and sanitation and nutrition. We just live longer and there are more people who make it to older adulthood than there have been in previous generations. And so I think that kind of brings the negative views about aging to the forefront because we've got so many more people now in that age category.
As you talked about, yeah, like darn kids and the music. I'm Beatles generation, I'll admit it. It occurred to me too, though, that it's really easy then to turn around and respond to that with, you know, over the hill, fuddy-duddy, like all that stuff, mm-hmm. older than dirt, mm-hmm. all that. Yeah, so it was interesting. I write notes and it's like, I get this narrow focus, obviously, because with, yeah, that one comment, you really opened it up to, yeah, it's been around, I suppose, for a long time.
Yeah, and I do think it's a little different now. I mean, historically, older adults would have been the repository for all the knowledge in a culture, because, you know, prior to having access, easy access to libraries, prior to having the internet and being able to Google or look up a YouTube video for how to fix anything, you know, our older adults would have historically been that knowledge repository. They would have been the person in the community who knew how to fix things, who knew the history of the community, who knew all of that information. That's just not the case anymore. And I, because of the ease of access to information today, we don't look to our older adults for that information anymore. And I do think that contributes maybe to a little more ageism than would have historically been around, because we don't have the exact same, and I'm going to put this in quote, uses for older adults that we might have had in those previous generations. That's not to say that older adults aren't still useful in any way, but it's that it's a different shift now. We aren't looking to them for the exact same things we would have in previous generations.
I suppose too that, you know, now we exist, we live very much in nuclear families, whereas before it was a multi-generational household. So yeah. So the generations were more interconnected and, once again, air quotes, useful to each other. And, you know, like in the days when there was a lot more labor-oriented work, you know, mom and dad, that middle generation, were quite often involved in that. So the grandparents could spend the time, tell the stories to the younger generation. The younger generation would go to the grandparents for learning because they were the two that were in the home the most.
Right.
Many of the women I speak with here on podcast, they first experience ageism in the workplace. Is that what you see?
I think that's very common. I don't know if that's where a lot, where everyone first experiences it, but I definitely think that is a very common experience for people, both men and women, in terms of getting to a certain age. And I think that age varies by industry, because like if you're in tech, you're over the hill by the time you're 35, because it's very, very youth focused. Whereas in other industries, that might not happen until you were in your 50s. But I think it's very common for people to get to a point in their career where they feel like their company is maybe passing them over for promotions, and those promotions are going to people who are younger. And the company, what the company is thinking in general is something like, well, you're getting ready to retire. You're in your mid 50s. We don't want to continue to invest and, you know, train and put a lot of effort into developing you, because you've probably got one foot out the door anyway. And so then people start to feel like they are getting passed over. They feel a bit of stagnation in their job. And then they do kind of start to go, do I really want to stay in this job? Is this really worth all my effort? Those kinds of things. So it kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy in that way when we think about, you know, not developing older workers. And then, well, why don't older workers continue to develop? Like, okay, come on. And what really should be happening is a conversation between employees and employers about, hey, what are your plans? You know, are you thinking about retiring? Are you not? Do you want to work for another 10 years? You know, and if we could just have honest conversations about that, it would probably be so much easier. But there's so much stigma around it, right? People maybe don't want to admit that they're going to get ready to retire because they don't want their employer to pass them over or discount them in any way. And employers don't want to have those conversations because they don't want to necessarily invest in somebody that then might go out the door. And so it just, it becomes kind of a mess in that situation. But so many people do talk about either getting to a point where they feel like they're getting passed over, or their ideas are not being taken seriously at work anymore, or they feel like what they're doing isn't all that interesting anymore for whatever reason. And so that feeling of stagnation and what am I going to do next? That could I even get another job if I were to retire, if I were to leave this job, am I even employable? Will anybody even look at my resume because I'm in my late 40s, early 50s, that kind of thing?
As you talked about the circle, the cycle, it occurred to me too that I look at it from the older employee's point of view. Now, if you've got savings, investments, getting pushed out of a job or eased out, whatever, isn't as stressful. But if a person hasn't had the opportunity to create a good sized nest egg, it can be hugely stressful, which affects health, which is another excuse to remove the person from the workplace. So that becomes a cycle as well.
Yep, absolutely.
Do you have any tips for a woman who is right now worried about her place at her worksite?
You know, I think if you have an employer that you can have an honest conversation with, like if you feel comfortable in that, that you could say, hey, you know, I'm thinking about working another 10 years, or alternatively, I am thinking I'm going to retire in the next 5 years, whatever it is. I think having those conversations can be amazingly beneficial if your employer is receptive to it, because that's going to be touchy depending on what kind of employer you have. But then the other piece of that is kind of thinking about what else would I want to do, right? Like if I had to pivot, what would that pivot be? I've had the privilege of interviewing many people in this age range who, for one reason or another, had to pivot, and they pivoted into that business that they'd always wanted to run, but never had the nerve to leave their job and go start. And that having to exit one job meant, hey, you know what? I'm going to go do that thing I've always wanted to do, or starting a nonprofit that some of them are running. Just all kinds of different pivots. So kind of thinking in the back of your mind, if I were to leave this job voluntarily or involuntarily, what would that pivot be? Where would I go next to look for that next position or to start that next adventure in terms of my career?
I've maintained too that as in family life or community life, the older employees have a wealth of knowledge if they've been with the company a long time. And an ideal situation would almost be like a job share, mm-hmm. so that they could pass that knowledge on to an up-and-coming person. Mm-hmm. And then when they feel that part of their job is done, then they do start looking at what else is next for them. And it's an adjustment period for both the person who's leaving the workplace and the person coming into a position of responsibility that hasn't been available for possibly decades.
Yeah, and that's a great example of kind of easing your way out. I know a lot of people who have done just that, gone part-time, job share, or just said, hey, you know, I want to go into a consulting role. Like I'm going to step back from the 40-hour work week, because who really wants to work a 40-hour work week anyway, right? I'll keep me on as a consultant, keep me on part-time. And that can work beautifully, just like you said, because that wealth of knowledge that older employee has and can bring to the table, it's not great when that just walks straight out your door and it didn't get passed on to anybody else. So how can we make that transition smooth and easy for both the company and for the employee, both?
Yeah. I've noticed a movement pushing employers to acknowledge menopause and all that comes with that in older female employees and accommodate it. Mm-hmm. Do you think that'll help making getting older a fact, not a disadvantage?
I hope so. I mean, I think anytime we can acknowledge and be realistic in our expectations and understanding of the people that we're working with, that benefits not only the employee, but the employer as well. Because then nobody's disappointed if we can set realistic expectations about what's going on. This is the other end of the spectrum. I just had a conversation with one of my employees who's a mom to an 18-month-old about, you know, that she needed to miss something because of the, you know, the childcare and those kinds of things. And it was really easy for me as a mom, none of my kids are small anymore, but to say, I get it. You know, I understand. I've been there. Do what you need to do. We'll make all this work. And I think the more of that we can have as, and again, I think this also requires women in leadership to take these roles and put these things into place to say, hey, I get it. I understand what you're going through. How can we accommodate? How can we adapt? What do you need? You know, whatever the things are. Because, and this is no offense to the guys, but they don't, you know, we don't know that much about menopause anyway. There's not a ton of research. We're really just, I think, coming to this new understanding where there's so much about it now, like in social media and in the news, and we're actually getting some research on it, those kinds of things. But we as women aren't really like taken aside and said, here is your handbook on everything that is going to happen during menopause. And so not only do we not all completely understand it, but the guys definitely don't. They have no idea. And so I think women in leadership are really going to have to take that step to say, we need to, this is a serious thing. This is a real health change, and we need to be actively advocating to accommodate and help our employees go through it in the best way possible, because it's going to benefit them. And then that's ultimately going to benefit us.
I've interviewed several people on menopause and that whole journey. And, you know, our parents, just first of all, it was a taboo subject, your personal mm-hmm. body workings, like totally taboo. And right. So now that we're realizing and being more bold about talking to each other and talking out loud to make sure that we do prepare our daughters. My daughters are both coming up for 40, and it's like we'll be having the talk probably in the next couple of months of this is what you can expect. You know, you, the older one, you've already told me this. So here's it. That's part of perimenopause, and it's just the fact of life. Mm-hmm. Like, don't be upset about it, that sort of thing. Yeah, yeah, just admitting everybody has health somewhere on the spectrum.
Yes, absolutely. I love that. Everyone has health, and we all have health issues, and they're different. And, you know, we're all going to benefit from trying to help each other navigate those health issues.
Yeah. A rising tide lifts all ships. Yep. Now, many women become what's being called invisible in a shop, at a meeting. So many places they're overlooked. They're looked through as though they don't even exist. Mm-hmm. It's hugely frustrating, and many women aren't as assertive as Grace or Frankie. How do we advocate for ourselves without being thought a bitchy old woman?
Oh, goodness. I think if I had the exact answer for that, I could be a very rich woman myself. You know, I've heard this talked about in different ways. Like, I definitely hear about it in terms of people saying, you know, that they've become invisible and people don't take them as seriously, especially as we grow older in general. Older adults just aren't taken as seriously as younger people, particularly in the workplace. I've also heard women talk about it, though, in a positive way, in the sense that I've become invisible and now I can just do whatever I want. And now I can kind of really be who I am, and it's not going to have the same kinds of consequences before, because people don't take me as seriously. So I think it is a little bit, depending on the situation, can be a double-edged sword. People might ignore you, but also you might get away with more at the same time. I don't know that there's one correct thing to do at work or wherever it is you feel like you're being invisible, other than, you know, continuing to raise your voice, continuing to raise your hand, doing the thing that I think all women should be doing, which is sitting at the table, right? Instead of, you know, sitting in the back of the room or sitting in the corner, making sure that you're sitting at the table and raising your voice and making yourself heard as much as possible. Other than that, I think we probably need some research on how to make that happen. Do we need to wear like hats? Do we need to, you know, put on different bright colors? Like, what is it we need to say, hey, I'm right here and you can listen to me and take me seriously?
As you said that, you reminded me of a woman I heard speak and say, I love going downtown for a drink now because nobody's going to hit on me. You know, like it can be safer it sometimes just in terms of the freedom that being older affords you. So,
Right.
yeah, good to keep that in mind. Let's talk healthcare. I'm in Canada. I don't know if you know that. Now we have a huge shortage of doctors here. And I recently heard that a lot of new doctors avoid taking on older patients as they might be dealing with chronic or unfixable conditions. And unfixable isn't fun. It's nicer to be able to fix a patient's issues.
Yeah, no, that is 100% true, and that is a problem we have here in the US as well. You know, when people go into medical school and being a doctor, they typically are going into that profession because they want to be able to help people and to fix their problems, right? I want to be able to You come in, you see me as a doctor, and then I say, here is the medication, or here is the treatment, or here is the surgery, or here is whatever it is that's going to fix your problem. And so, as we get older, we tend to have more chronic conditions. So, things that we're not going to be, we'll be maybe able to treat, but we're not going to be able to get to go away completely or quickly necessarily. And we often have multiple chronic conditions. So we're dealing with two or three different things that are ongoing and for long periods of time. And that can be very frustrating to doctors, but especially I think as doctors have become more and more specialized, you know, so now you go see your rheumatologist and you go see your cardiovascular doctor and you go, you know, the endocrinologist. As they have become more and more specialized, they don't necessarily talk to each other and they're not thinking about the whole person. And older adults really need doctors who are looking at the whole situation, right? All the different conditions, all the different medications, everything that's happening, which is why geriatricians are so important. We in the US particularly have a shortage of geriatricians who specialize in working with older adults. And when we get one, like if I can get a client in with a geriatrician, it is almost magical because they are looking at all the conditions and all the medications and all the things that the person is doing and then and trying to, you know, work with the whole person versus, you know, going to one to the endocrinologist and they run their tests and they give their medications, but they're not looking at anything else. And then going to the cardiovascular and they're looking at their medications and their things and nothing else. And it just, it's so frustrating when we really, it would be, that system would work great if each person only had one condition, right? Only the cardiovascular issue, and then they could fix it and it would be fine. But it's not. You're a whole person. And that the health of the whole person does get a little more complicated as we get older. And we need to take that into account, not run away from it. I think so. Geriatricians, few and far between. And in the US, they aren't paid that well. They're kind of the one of the lowest paid specialties. So that doesn't encourage people to go into that field either. So you've got the ageism. They think every problem the older adult's going to have is because people are old. So it's not fixable. The poor pay that they're going to get. So if you've spent a lot of money going into medical into debt for going to medical school, not getting paid well doesn't seem all that appealing. And then the idea that I can't actually like fix anything makes it not all that appealing for people to go into that field. But the geriatricians actually have one of the highest satisfactions with their jobs of all the different medical specialties because they really are helping people. They get to know their patients, they have them over long periods of time, you know, they're working with them, they get to have that develop that relationship with them. So they're highly satisfied. They just don't make enough money and they have to overcome age bias to ever get into the field in the first place.
I've never said, I'm sure my doctor's only 15. Oh dear. Now, just I'm going to go sideways just for a second here. A geriatrician is the doctor, the physician, and a gerontologist is a person who studies the field of gerontology. Is that correct?
Yeah. So gerontologists study like the sociology, the psychology of aging versus the geriatrician who is like the medical doctor in the field of geriatrics. So like the MD, it's like an MD versus a PhD. Yep.
Okay. As you talked about geriatricians, I was caretaker for my mom prior to 2010, and she moved in with me. And when I found a doctor who specialized in older people, I went to talk to him and sort of said, we're a tag team, so you do have to take both of us. And he was okay with that. And it proved useful, or I won't say it proved useful. It became very apparent how valuable he was, because with my mother's dementia, she started getting super nasty and saying like not only awful things to me, but if she was out anywhere, she would just say awful things about me. And so I went in and said, okay, this is the way things are developing. And he said, come on to my office, I'll talk to you. And my mom was in the doctor's little room there, and he sat me down and he said, is your mother safe with you? And I looked at him and I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, she is. I know when I'm getting frustrated or upset. I said, I phoned my brother and he's over within 10 minutes. So yes, she is. But it occurred to me that the sort of insight that was needed would only come from somebody who was full spectrum care. So yeah, it was really interesting to just that one question. And I went like, holy moly. Now, in healthcare, we have like the care training is, I've seen competence in the care abilities of facility staff, but not a lot of understanding about the dementias. I've heard you speak about care training and how they aren't always as well trained as we would hope.
Yeah, I mean, so, and I don't know, I don't know how similar things are in Canada versus the U.S. But we have people in retirement communities, assisted livings, nursing homes. They often have their hearts in the right place, right? They have taken these jobs, but there isn't necessarily a ton of training about how to work with people in with cognitive impairments or dementia. And that is a really special skill set in terms of how to approach people who have dementia. You know, one of the things I see with our clients all the time is we'll have like a husband and wife, and one of them will have dementia, and the other spouse wants to correct them when they're wrong. When, you know, the one who has dementia says it's raining today and it's not, and the other one says it's not raining today, but it just starts a fight, right? They can't. And so, you know, one of the things they train you on when you are working with people with dementia is don't argue, right? You can redirect, but don't correct, because there's no point. You're never going to convince them, and it's just going to make things kind of escalate, and you're going to get frustrated and they're going to get frustrated. And that, something as simple as that, you know, when you've been married to someone for 30 years, you want to just tell them the truth. No, it's not raining outside, you know, but, or I've also had the situation where they just didn't want to lie to their spouse. They were like, well, I can't tell them that it's raining outside when it's not. That would be lying to them. And I can't lie to them. This is now, I love this person. I can't lie to them. And it really takes a lot for them to get to the point where they understand that, no, you're actually helping them, you know, rather than getting them frustrated and upset. So the people who work in facilities are the same way. I mean, unless they have had specific training on how to approach people with dementia, how to talk to people with dementia, how to redirect people, that can be very frustrating for both them and for the people who are receiving care. But I also think it's one of the reasons that you have such high turnover in those jobs, in the care field in general, because it is difficult to care for someone with dementia. you know, and you have to have a lot of patience, but you also need those skills. You need that training in order to make it go well in the first place.
I had a career in facility elder care, and I loved the dementia side of it. I just loved it. And one of the examples, you talk about the weather, but we had a woman with short-term memory loss, like just wouldn't remember anything, and her daughter died. And so the other daughter came in, and the woman in care said, you know, where's the other daughter? And she said she passed, you know, and explained it. The woman was obviously distraught. But when the other daughter came in the next time and said, where is your sister? She said, she's on a cruise, Mom. She'll be back in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Because you just don't want that person grieving that sort. I mean, the grief over a loss
every
of a child.
Every time.
Yeah, yeah.
And every time, over and over again.
Yeah. So, you know, like you are sometimes saving a person from so much by those many lies, those kind lies, I suppose.
Kind lies. And that's what I always try to frame it as with people who are caregiving. It's like you're not lying to them to be mean. You're lying to them to be kind, to keep them from getting upset all the time and getting yourself upset too.
Yeah. Yeah. I was visiting with a client. I still do a little bit of companion care. And I was visiting with a client the other day, and we were looking through, of all things, a Norman Rockwell book I've got with these beautiful paintings. Mm-hmm. And she must have shared easily a dozen stories about her mother, thinking her mother was just, you know, at the other place, at her home, whatever. And it was just such a lovely set of stories. I mean, we all love stories in one shape or another. And does it really matter if that person who's in the story has actually been gone for 50 years? It doesn't matter. But it's good fun there. Our parents held doctors, teachers, nurses, police in such high regard. Never questioned them. It's certainly not true for me. what do you see in your practice?
In terms of holding those professionals in high regard?
Well, yeah, you know, if you get someone who's finally willing to see you as an older person, I'm not talking about the advocate necessarily. We'll get to the advocate shortly. But, you know, like if they're not, their heart's not in the elder care doctoring, they might sort of pass them over or pass them off. And if the person is actually, they may be 85, but they know what's going on in their body and they know something's not right or something's changed, but they're too nervous to say anything, to question the doctor.
Yeah. So you are absolutely right. This is generational. I think a lot of times where our older adults today find it much more difficult to advocate for themselves because, yeah, you had this doctor and you listened to the doctor and the doctor told you what to do and they knew better and they don't want to be seen. I think particularly older women often don't want to be seen as a problem or, you know, too much trouble. Not everybody. No, don't anybody come for me and say, you know, I know that's not everyone, but I do see that kind of as a pattern. And so understanding that you as an adult child or a spouse might have to help advocate is very important. But if we can advocate for ourselves, that's even better, because trying to get medical care and be taken seriously as a woman is difficult. There's a lot of kind of medical gaslighting in terms of, oh, it's just your anxiety. It's just your, you know, it's like, no, I'm not anxious. I have an actual problem. And so as a woman and as an older person, I think those two things kind of become a double whammy in terms of getting your healthcare needs taken seriously and getting people to listen to you about what's wrong. So being willing to advocate, being willing to go for a second opinion, to, you know, push to get the answers you want is something that we all need to be willing to do. It's a skill we need to develop because it's very easy to get passed over. It's very easy to for them to just say, you're getting older. Those aches and pains are normal. You know, it's just your age. When really, no, let's do a little investigating here to find out what's actually happening. And I do think that, you know, it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable because here's this person in a position of authority who had years and years of training, and they're telling you, hey, it's no big deal, or it's this or that, and you don't think that's correct. And so having to stand up to them and be like, no, actually, yeah, like you said, I know my body, and this isn't normal.
My favorite anecdote is one where the doctor says, now, Mrs. Smith, that hip of yours, it's 80 years old now. You've got to expect problems. And she turns and says, the other hip's 80 years old, too, and it's not giving me any problems at all. You know, so yeah.
I actually tell a story like that when I do presentations and things where I have a friend who had a shoulder that was like that. And it's just, you know, it's that kind of thing. It's like, I got this other shoulder and it's the exact same age. So could we look at this? This is really, you know, this one's bothering me and this one's not. So
yeah,
let's dig in. Let's find out. And you know, if somebody was 20, but you would, they would do x-rays, they would do physical therapy, they would do all kinds of things to fix it or to figure out what was wrong. So don't just assume that it's my age, right? Don't treat me, not my age.
Yeah. Now, along that same line, we talked about the fact that, you know, women my age, 65, 75, are invisible, but a number of women I know are caregiving their parents. Now, I know that's a major part of your business, and I'm wondering what happens when I'm 70, apparently invisible, or the brunt of ageism. How do I advocate for my elder? I mean, my mother, my aunt, whatever.
So I think it is a little different, at least in my experience, when you are advocating for someone else, in terms of being able to speak up for them. I feel much more confident, and maybe this is just because of my role in the world, but I feel much more confident advocating for my mother and saying no, because I, you know, even though I'm in middle age, right? I'm becoming invisible. I feel much more confident in that I can get somebody to take me seriously and argue on her behalf than I necessarily even do about getting somebody to take my own healthcare needs seriously. I don't know if that's just because she's my mom and I'm coming after you if you do anything to her, right? Or if that is that it's easier sometimes to defend other people, advocate for other people than it is to put our own needs first and say, no, I really need something. A lot of my caregiving clients, I mean, I have some really phenomenal daughters out there, adult daughters and wives too, who are tremendous advocates. And I'm kind of their support team in terms of, you know, backup, and I'm behind the scenes saying, no, okay, now, yes, they can do that. No, they can't do that. And go in and say this, or, you know, trying to like coach them from behind the scenes about how to navigate certain things. But they are tremendous advocates for their parents. And I should hope that my kids will be that way for me one day too, because these daughters are doing important, undervalued, but tremendously important work in terms of caregiving and supporting their parents.
I have on occasion told people who are advocating, you know, like if you're the live-in caregiver, you know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And with my mother, for example, as her dementia increased, I was getting all this rhetoric and all these words from people in the care area. And I remember just saying, okay, you know, my mother has dementia. Yes. Well, you know, you are currently throwing 14 different caregivers at her each week. Do you think that's helpful for a person with dementia? You know, and I would just go through all these, and then I would end with a question that if they have any education, they know that I am speaking the truth and it is not helpful for a person with dementia. So I've sometimes told people just to ask the questions, make them answer and feel good about the answer.
Yeah, absolutely. Ask it and be like, what would you do in this situation?
Yeah, exactly. If this was your mother, would you be okay with this? Yeah. Now, I recently found a quote by Helen Mirren, and it says, when you're 16, 30 seems ancient. When you're 30, 45 seems ancient. When you're 45, 60 seems ancient. And when you're 60, nothing seems ancient. That last part... That last part is so true. Once you're 60, you're more than halfway there, probably, maybe. And the more important issue is making the most of what's left. One of the bullet points about your book, and we're going to talk about your book in a minute, is learn how to embrace and make the most of your later years. Can you share a few tips?
Sure, absolutely. So one of the things that... with my book, I'm really advocating for us to tell a positive story, have positive views on our own aging. And there's lots of research on this now that shows that people who have a positive outlook on aging, hold positive age stereotypes, they live longer, they walk faster, they have less risk of cardiovascular disease, they have less risk of dementia. I mean, just all these positive things that are associated with that view. And in my own personal work as a care manager, one of the things that I see is that people who have a positive outlook on aging, they prepare for their own aging. So they do things like their powers of attorney, so their legal documents, their wills. They talk to their loved ones about, hey, this is where, if I ever need care, this is where I'd like to go. Or here's how I'm planning to finance that. So here's where the money is for these things. Or if I need care and I want to stay at home, here's, you know, here's how that's going to work. You know, they're planning, they're thinking about not only the retirement, you know, I'm going to get my gold watch and not have to work anymore, but they're also actively thinking about, hey, this is going to be a journey, and here's how I prepare, and here's how I make it the best it can be for me and everybody I'm going to be on this journey with. And the power of that, the empowerment of that, when you have a positive outlook, is tremendous. And it will make all the difference in how well your older adult years go. Because when we fear our own aging, which it's a multi-trillion dollar industry out there trying to sell you things. They want you to fear it, because if we can make you fear it, we can sell you a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of creams and all that sort of stuff. Then if we fear it, we kind of bury our heads in the sand and we go, oh, no, that aging thing, that's happening to other people. It's not really going to happen to me. And I'm just going to die warm in my bed and everything's going to be fine. But that's really... It is amazing to me what people do. So, like in my care management business, I get so many people who come in and it's a crisis, and we're trying to figure out what to do because nobody talked about it, nobody planned, and now something has happened, and everybody's in a panic and everybody's upset. And it is my job to help calm them down and help them navigate, and that's wonderful. I can do it, but we could have avoided all that if we had had a conversation a year or two earlier, maybe 5 years earlier, about here's the plan. And I love it when a client comes in and is like, nothing's wrong right now. We just want to make a plan, and we want to make sure that our kids are on the same page and that everybody kind of, oh, my heart, when that happens. I mean, just that those people are looking for, it's not that anything's wrong and they're not like, you know, down in the dumps about it or anything, but they're just being, they're looking forward to it. But they're also being realistic, and they're going, what do we do to make sure we get what we want? And this goes as good as it can possibly go. And that is the whole reason I got into writing the book, because it's like the power of that positive outlook is tremendous. And we are in a culture, we're in societies that are so anti-aging. You probably don't even realize how negative your internal monologue is about it sometimes. I'll give you an example. My husband and I were in New York this past weekend, and I couldn't get my headphones to connect to my phone. And I said, oh, these are my old headphones. They're just old and cranky. And my husband looked at me and he said, you know, that's ageist, right? I was like, oh no. But so it's like we've been fed this cultural narrative of that old people are cranky and old people are slow and all, you know, all these things. And it's just, it's in our brains. And even though I am trying to advocate against it as hard as I can, it's still in my brain. And I am subject to the culture around me all the time. So it's like we're fighting a battle. And the first step is to just recognize it, to listen to our own, like, what are we saying to ourselves? What are we thinking to ourselves? And then how are those thoughts playing out into our everyday life? Am I planning for a great aging, or am I going, you know, that's never really going to happen to me. I hope it all goes well if it does happen, you know, that kind of thing. So I think there's just such tremendous power in recognizing our own ageism and then trying to shape it into a positive story, tell ourselves a positive story to get all those benefits of looking forward to it and planning ahead.
Well, I'm in the same boat as you, and I caught myself. It might have just been one or two interviews ago. We were talking about, you know, that age difference. I'm 70. I had a client who was 92, and I'm fairly good with tech. And I was explaining that because I was so young compared to him, anytime he had an issue, it would... He'd say, and this is the tone of voice I used, just wait for Agnes. When Agnes gets here, she can fix it. And the minute it was out of my mouth, I went like, oh my God, what have I just done? It's like everybody that's over 75 talks in this weird voice that we see in movies. Oh dear, and I just felt so bad.
And you wonder, like, okay, what if I'd never heard that in the movies? Would I talk like that, or is that like did somebody do it, and then that's how I got in the movies, or was it in the movies, and then now I'm doing it? Like, which came first? How has this happened?
Well, and then I played that mental game with myself, thinking, no, actually, maybe he talks like that. Not quite, but close. No. Okay. Your book is called Keenagers.
Yes, with a K.
I have heard some other terms for us as we get older. Sure. I think the one I like best as a woman is Queenagers, but that's beside the point.
I'm fine with that too.
Another one I heard was the welderly. So I guess I was going to ask you if teenagers, as they do get much older, become the welderly. Tell us about your book.
Let's just make sure welderly is like well elderly.
Yes.
Well, so they're health. Yeah. It's not one I've actually heard before. I love it. So I've been working with older adults for 20 plus years. And when I started to try to write my book, I couldn't come up with any really positive language for older adults. There's a lot of negative language. There are some neutral ones like older persons, older people, older adult, seniors. And then there's a few like trying to be positive, just like I am. My local senior center just changed their name to the Active Agers Center, you know, and they're trying to change to be positive. But it's really difficult. If you just try to go find positive words about older adults, they're just not out there. It's crazy. So a friend of mine and I were sitting waiting on our kids to come out of dance class. And I said, okay, let's throw out words. Like there's gotta be something. And we couldn't come up with anything. So she called her mom, who was in her 70s. And she said, Mom, what do you like to be called? Like, what do you and your friends want to be called? And her mom was the one who said teenagers, because it's what they use for like their older adult group at church. But then she said, but it's right because keen, you know, keen, the word means like keen to do, keen to learn, keen, you know, or enthusiasm for. And I think that's perfect for so many older adults today who are keen to keep going, right? They're still working, they're volunteering, they're caregiving, they're traveling, they're keen to do. Whereas our traditional view of retirement is like you retire and you go sit on your front porch or, you know, you just relax and do nothing. And that's just not an accurate perception anymore. So it is, it's not, you know, a word that I came up with on my own, but I do love it. And I love that there's a lot of older adults using it for themselves. And I like the meaning behind it, that they're keen to do and not just observe, because I think that's really accurate today.
Yeah. And I have an expression that I use relatively often, and it's this granny's off her rocker. So.
Yeah. Well, and I listened to your interview with Andy Lyons.
Oh, yeah. She's fabulous.
I loved the, I've got to go listen to her podcast now, the Don't Be Caged by Your Age.
Correct.
Oh, that's perfect. I was like, that's exactly right. If you've met one 65-year-old, you've met one 65-year-old. That number means nothing, nothing. Yeah.
Okay. So what can we expect in your book?
So in the book, you will hear stories. I've got a lot of interviews with teenagers, right? People to inspire you about, you know, growing older and what this can be like. And then there's a lot of ways to plan, right? What do you need to do? What are the documents? What are the things you need to do to get your ducks in a row as you get older so that this goes as well as it possibly can? And then there's a lot of information in there on ageism and trying to make yourself aware of it, look at your own thoughts, and then try to fight against ageism in the world.
There we go. Yay.
Help you tell a positive story about aging to yourself and to everybody else.
Right, right. I often tell my grandson that I'm going to live forever, and so far, so good.
True.
But now that he's old enough to think he's in his early teens, I'll say something, and he said, "But Grandma, you said you're going to live forever." I go, "Oh yeah, I guess." Going to have to figure out how to modify this in a positive way. Where do we find you on? Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
So my website is just my name, CorinneAllman.com, and there you can learn more about me. There's links to the book, and then all my social media links are on there as well.
Good. All right. May I ask you a personal question before we close?
Sure.
I love asking these questions. You seem to be wedged between the Blue Ridge Mountains and the Atlantic Ocean. Do you have a favorite, mountains or ocean?
Definitely the mountains. Oh. I am not a fan of getting sand in my swimsuit. Mm-mm, no.
That ocean's too cold to swim in anyways.
And you know, the sand just gets everywhere. It just gets, and there's no fighting it. It gets everywhere. It's beautiful. I like to look at it from a hotel room maybe, but it's, definitely the mountains. Our mountains really got damaged with the Hurricane Helene here a few weeks ago. So they're recovering right now, but the mountains are so beautiful. And that would be my choice.
Well, I'm on the west coast of Canada, and we don't have lots of sandy beaches here. We do have lots of rocky beaches, and mm-hmm. they are great places to storm watch. So you can stick with your mountains. I'll keep my ocean.
That's fair.
Okay, your website link is in the show notes. All of your links are on your page at our website. Listeners, what's your experience with ageism? Have you been on the receiving end? Do you lump younger generations together at times with a less than appreciative comment? Have you ever thought, oh, I'm too old for that? Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Maybe there's a question I didn't ask, Corinne. Ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer. Share this episode We are exceeding the expectations of every generation that's gone before us. If we're going to live long, we may as well prosper. And I looked up the definition of that word prosper to make sure it wasn't all about the money. And strong matches were flourish and thrive. Share this episode so that your friends are flourishing and thriving along with you. Leave those stars and reviews. They help us expand our reach. And you can support this podcast by buying me a coffee. That's a pretty cheap option. That link is in the show notes and above Corinne's head on her page at our website. I've also registered at Substack. Following there is free. Corinne Amon, thank you for being my guest today, giving us so much food for thought and encouragement as we navigate these teenage years. I had elder in quotations, but I'm going to say teenage years.
I think teenage is better. Yeah, I
There,
love
I
it. Thank
agree.
you so
There we
much.
go. Thank you. Have a great rest of week.
You too. Bye-bye.